My story with the McLeans goes back up to my time in Pennsylvania at the time when I was a youth pastor up there. It's really God providentially putting us together through circumstances. There is this thing, I don't know if you remember it, but it was called COVID, and it hit in 2020, and we probably wouldn't have interacted as much had not been for that, because they were in isolation, you know, we're all sequestered off to our own places, and we were kind of in quarantine masking mix kind of thing up in Pennsylvania. And so it worked out that they were able to Zoom in and talk to our teens about what they were doing in Wales and their missions. And Steve did some Sunday school lessons there with our teens, and we got to know them a little bit through that. And then, once again, another act of providence, just a month or so before I was getting ready to transition down to here, Steve came by. I think it was just you at the time. You were doing a trip up there and gave a presentation just updating the church up there, because they supported the McLeans up there in Pennsylvania. And just and I connected with them and said, hey, I'm going to be in Greenville here in a little while. And they're here in August. And your sending church is Mount Calvary, correct? Yeah. So they're here in the area with those churches. And we just love the McLeans and the work they're doing in a very hard place. I mean, historically, Wales has been so instrumental in how God has propelled the gospel through the West, and yet now it's such a cold and hard place, and they're really doing some difficult and necessary work there. So I'm just thrilled for you to come tonight and share with us your burden and your desire to share the gospel with the people in Wales and the United Kingdom. And so you go ahead and come on up, Steve, and we'll let you share with the people.
Well, good evening. In coming to your church this evening, I've met a former classmate, a former missionary colleague, a former teacher, and a former boss. So my past has not left me. I haven't been able to outrun it yet. And I'm thankful to renew some of those acquaintances this evening. My wife and I attended Bob Jones and lived in Greenville for several years while I was in seminary. And we left to go to Wales in 2008. But whenever we come back to Greenville, it's a reminder of how people have poured themselves into us and invested in our lives. And we're thankful for everything we received while we were in Greenville. So my family is here, and I'll introduce them here at the start. I'm Steve, and if you all could just stand, since there's so many people. Evelyn, you don't have to stand, but so my wife, Marcia, and then I guess from youngest to oldest here, we have Beatrice and Amelia and Gwyneth and Margaret. All right, thank you. You can sit down, being good sport with that. And we're just back in the U.S. for about 3.5 weeks. As your pastor mentioned, I was up in Pennsylvania by myself and was taking a trip just visiting supporting churches because our girls are all in local schools in Wales. So that means we have a 6-week summer break, and in the past we've come back for 6 weeks every few years and just blitzed our supporting churches and our families, and then raced back to start school in September. And at this point we just feel like that's just not really the best way forward. So I take trips on my own to visit supporting churches when I can, and we're back to visit family and to visit supporting churches, and we're thankful to make a connection with your church this evening. So I'm just going to tell you about our ministry. We are in North Wales, and I'll come to that in a moment, but there's our family in case you didn't get a good view of them. There's the names and their girls' ages there. We're standing in front of a castle which was built in the 1280s, and there's another picture of that I'll show you in a moment. But Wales, while it has its own national identity, it's part of the United Kingdom, and it was conquered by England back in the 1280s, and they're still a bit sore about that. But the castle there is a remnant from the English when they were building fortresses and conquering Wales. So that's just about a 5-minute walk from our house. And we have co-workers over there who work with Gospel Fellowship Association. Some of you might know Joe and Abby Nicholson. We worked with them for a few years, and we're still in the same area in North Wales, and our families get together for birthdays and holidays and things like that. Several years ago, though, after working with Joe and Abby for a couple of years, we moved over to this village. It's called Rhythlin. So in Welsh, the double D is pronounced like a TH. And while we speak English there, all the road signs are in English and in Welsh. So that's pronounced Rhythlin. So I won't, if you want to know more explanation, I'll attempt that later if you want to come and ask me a question after the service. And as you drive into Rhythlin, there's our castle. It's kind of our landmark and the thing we're best known for. And if you're not familiar with Wales, here it is in relation to England and Scotland and Northern Ireland. So Wales is highlighted in red there. It's about 120 miles from north to south, just to give you some idea of the size. It's on the western border of England. And the Welsh flag is the bottom left. It's the dragon. And it did not get included in the Union Jack. The other flags are representative of England and Scotland and Northern Ireland. And they all, you combine those, and that's how you get the Union Jack flag. But they left the Welsh off. I'm not really sure why. But I guess the dragon didn't quite match with everything else. But that's where we're located. We're on the northern coast of Wales, so we're on the Irish Sea. Our village is just a couple miles from the coast. It's a beautiful area. And in general, you've probably heard things like this before if you're familiar with the spiritual conditions in Europe, but in the UK, this is roughly how things work. You can see there 55% of the public in Britain don't claim any religion at all. And 28% of them claim to believe in God or a higher power of some kind. Among those who call themselves Christians, only 56% actually believe that there is a God. You can put that down to nominal Anglicanism, the Church of England or the Church of Wales, which is what the Anglican Church in Wales is called. You can be a church-going person, although there aren't many of those, and not even believe in God and still be comfortable going to church a lot of different places. And then in Wales, about 1 to 2% of the population attend a gospel church of any kind. So, just stretch that definition of gospel church as wide as you can, and about 1 to 2% of the people would go to a church like that. So other places in Europe are even more sparsely populated by Christians, but this is the situation in the UK. So our ministry has focused the last several years on a chapel, a church in the village of Rhythlin. It's called Gosen Church. Gosen is Welsh for Goshen. So if you know the stories in the Bible about the land of Goshen, where the Israelites went when they came to Egypt, in Wales, the chapels are all named after places in the Bible. So Mount Zion, Bethel, pick a name and you'll find a chapel with that name. And ours was called Gosen years ago. Back in the mid-80s, the building, which is about 180 years old, it was no longer being used. It was owned by a denomination, the Welsh Congregationalists, but it wasn't in use, and some local believers bought the building and started a gospel preaching church. It was pastored by a man who is still in the church named Phil, and he taught school and pastored the church as well. And he came to the point of needing to retire several years ago, and they were looking for some way to continue. The church was down to about 6 members, and so they invited us to come and help them. So we decided that instead of planting a church alongside the church that was already started where the Nicholsons, our co-workers, were, that it made more sense to help an existing work. And because there is a small Christian population in Wales that believe the gospel, we've tried to partner with them wherever we can. We're not there to just import our own brand of Greenville Christianity or American Christianity or Bob Jones Christianity. We're there to support and help the work of the gospel in Wales and help churches get established that are going to reach their own communities. So we decided to go and help this church. So we've been there for a number of years now, and I'll tell you more about the ministry in the church in a few minutes. But that's where we are. We're on the main street called the High Street that goes through our village, and it's a very good location for us. Might be a little bit hard to see that. That was pre-COVID. And you might not be able to make out the faces very well. I'm not sure. But that's just a sample of what the church looks like. A few of the faces in the photo aren't there anymore. And there's a few folks in the church that aren't in the photo. So, but that's about the size group that we're working with right now. So over the time that we've been in Rivlin, it's been important to us to try to connect with the community. You know, people are not looking for a church home. You might move to one of the bigger cities in the UK and find Christians that have just moved in and looking for a church. But in general, in Wales, that's just not the case. There aren't people in search of a church. So we're not asking them to be missionaries to us and come through our doors to visit us. We're trying to connect with them in the world that they understand. So one thing we've done is try to connect with the local school. Our girls have all gone through the local primary school, which is called Ysgol y Castell. That's Welsh for castle school, because the school is right next to the castle. And we've been part of the parent-teacher association there. We try to contribute, not just in ways that would be from our church, but just contribute as parents to show them that we're interested in more than just promoting our church or even our faith. We're there to just help and to show kindness and to be friends with people. But a door has been open for several years for me as a pastor to come in and lead services in the school. It might seem strange that in a secular culture, they have services in the school, but they have mandatory religious education. And we've developed a good relationship with the head teacher. And so every so often, every month or so, I'll come in on a Friday and just lead a service. I'll have a Bible lesson of some kind. And I'm not there to preach an evangelistic sermon, but I am there to sow seeds for the gospel. So I do a lot of just reminding them that there's a God who made them, who is interested in them, and pointing to Jesus as the most amazing person you'll ever meet. I'll talk about his miracles and urge them to try to learn more. If I go much beyond that, that will really probably just raise objections and close the door. In fact, that did happen several years ago in connection with someone else who was in the school. The door was closed for a while. They just went a bit too far in things that would be fine in Sunday school and children's church, but don't quite work in a local school. So we're very thankful for that opportunity. Something else that's happened in the last several years is at the end of the year, they have a year six, which is fifth grade, but it's the last year of the primary school. They have a leavers service. So the outgoing year six pupils, they get awards. They put on a little play for the parents. And for the last 6 years, we've been able to give a Bible away to every year six student. So I'm able to kind of partly lead the service and give these Bibles away. The PTA gives out a dictionary to each student, so I give them the dictionary as well. And that's our third daughter, Amelia, getting her Bible this year. She just finished primary school. And it's just a great way, again, to sow seeds, to plant seeds in people's lives who they don't go to church, they don't have a Christian background, they probably don't read the Bible, but we've been able to put out probably 150 Bibles or more to families in the village. And just a few hours after this service, I ran into a couple of kids from Amelia's class, and one of the girls said, thank you for the Bible. I went home and my mom and I, we read the first two pages already. So that was just really encouraging. Maybe she read Genesis 1 and 2, I'm not really sure, but we were thrilled, and every year we get notes of appreciation through Facebook or wherever from some of the parents. We try to give a nice Bible. It's not just a flimsy paperback or something. We spend a little bit of money on that, our church does, and we give those away. So we're thankful for that opportunity. There's a hospital near our village, the main hospital for the area, and the way medical training in the UK works is that university students, pre-med students, they do a few weeks placement at a few different hospitals. They're required to do at least one in Wales. And most of them don't come to North Wales. There's not as much to do unless you like the outdoors and hiking and things like that. But over the years, we do get a number of medical students that are either doing their university training or junior doctors that have a longer placement. And we get doctors from other parts of the world. So for about a year, we had a couple of Nigerian doctors, pediatricians, that were furthering their training in This is the wife of one of those doctors. They were in our church for a while. And we do have opportunities to disciple and help believers that are just there for a short time. So this guy on the left there, Tim, he's from Northern Ireland. He was a junior doctor, and he was with us for several weeks. And we just try to, we have them in our home for meals. They're usually, because there isn't much to do, they're usually up for anything. So they'll come to our prayer meeting, they'll come to most services we have, and we just invest in them as much as we can. The girl here on the right, Anastasia, she's originally from Ghana, but she grew up in the UK. And when she came to us, she had just been saved through a friend in university who had invited her to church, and she was saved. And she came to us really not knowing a lot, but there was another Christian student as well, Zach, who brought her along. And, we just discipled her and tried to encourage her as much as we could. She went on to another church in Cardiff, which is in the south of Wales, and was baptized. And she came back to see us, and she said, you know, it was in your church that I first came to understand justification by faith alone. And, we're just thrilled that there are doctors in the UK that we've had a chance to invest in, even if it's just for a few weeks or months. And we've just had to accept that that's part of our ministry, that there are some who come and they don't stick around, but they're going to go elsewhere, and they'll take with them what they've learned. So over the years, we've seen a few people converted. This man, Gwyn, was converted a few years ago, completely unchurched background, received a leaflet through his door from our church and came and was saved. This girl, Bridget, from London originally, and she was saved just before she came to us, but a story behind all of that I won't share right now, but we were able to disciple her, and she was baptized in our church. And she's gone back to London where her family is. So we're thankful, though, that we have seen some fruit in our ministry. And as your pastor was mentioning, it is a difficult area. And just before I show you the rest of what I have to show you, I wanted to read you a few verses from 1 Corinthians chapter 3, which really more and more is shaping my own view of how things work in ministry. And in 1 Corinthians 3, Paul is admonishing the believers in Corinth because they're kind of dividing up into smaller groups because they've chosen their favorite Christian personality. Some like Peter, some like Paul, some like Apollos. And Paul is writing to say, look, you don't need to do that. You don't need to split up or draw lines over whose favorite preacher you have. And so in verse 5, he says, what then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you believed, as the Lord assigned to each. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. He who plants and he who waters are one, and each will receive his wages according to his labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. And typically in the UK, when someone is converted, when they come to faith in Christ, it usually is after a long process in which they have had multiple Christians say something about Jesus to them, or pray for them, or show them a kindness and plant some kind of seed. And if you're there to see that person come to faith, it's only because the Lord just happened to have you there at that time. And it really is God's work. And we've seen that in our own ministry, that you don't see many doorstep conversions where you meet someone, you introduce them to the gospel, you give them the whole gospel, and they're saved right then and there. That almost never happens. And what is required is just faithful sowing the seeds, faithfully shining the light, loving people, and being prepared to speak to them if you have the opportunity. And one thing I've made use of a lot in recent years is just the phrase, as a Christian. And, you know, you can use that. You have to use it in a genuine way, not in a phony way. But, you know, as Christians, our faith and the Bible, it touches on everything, doesn't it? And so, if you get into a conversation with a non-Christian, you know, before long, you're going to have a chance to say, well, you know, as a Christian, you know, I'm trusting the Lord for such and such. Or as a Christian, I'm praying for this. You know, you can force someone to listen to you to say that. Or you can prayerfully look for very natural ways to bring that up. I was in the school line recently, and one of the mothers was talking about one of her older children who had been to school with one of our older girls, and this woman's daughter had gotten into trouble, and she was just, you know, not a Christian, no church background, and she was just basically saying she just felt like, you know, there was no hope for this daughter. And I just said, well, you know, there is hope. And I said, as a Christian, you know, my main weapon for parenting is just praying. I just pray. You know, she knows I'm a pastor, and I could shoot Bible verses at her or whatever, but I just said, you know, I just pray and ask God for help. That's the main thing I do as a parent. That's the main thing that works the best. And I just said, you should pray. Pray for your daughter. Now, she's not a Christian. But God sometimes hears the prayers of lost people too. And that could be a seed that, you know, she'll go away and think about that. That was all I could do in that moment. The line was moving through the school gate, and we were going to get our kids from school. But you can say, as a Christian. Now, I don't know how that works in Greenville, because everybody says they're Christians. At least it was that way when we lived here. But we're constantly looking for those kinds of opportunities that in the moment they don't seem like a lot. But, you know, God is bigger than anything any one of us is going to do. And it's His work. So we had to go through COVID like everybody else, and that affected our church in a lot of different ways. There was a ladies' ministry that came out of COVID. For us, and in Wales in particular, this was a difficult thing. There is a bit of a difference between Wales and England. And Wales tends to be, just as a culture, a little more backward-looking. They're often very wistful for the past, and they view that as just a very rich period of history for them. And if you've ever seen the movie How Green Was My Valley, it's a very old movie based in Wales, that will picture for you a lot about Welsh culture. It's very glass half empty. That's sometimes the case for churches as well. And the good thing about COVID was that churches could learn that we could be forced to change everything we do, and the church doesn't explode or disintegrate or cease to exist, that God's work marches on. And so for our church, you know, we had services canceled for a long time. We had to change how we did things. And yet that period of time really was a key time for our church. We saw a few people saved, just the Lord doing things in their lives that we weren't even aware of. And for a number of newer Christians especially, they had a real yearning just to be together in whatever form that took. It didn't have to be a service. It could be anything. So a number of the ladies began just meeting up for walks. Here they are at the beach along the coast there, from not too far from our church. And out of that has come some really good ministry among the women. Marcia's had a lot of a big hand in that. And there they are in a ladies' outing just a few weeks ago at a garden not too far from us. And some of these ladies are really growing. We're hoping to see a couple of them baptized in October. And one of them joined the church. You'll see a video of her just in a moment here. And so last summer we had a Zoom baptism and membership class. We weren't able to meet as we would have liked, but you know, Rosie on the bottom left was saved just before COVID. Sue on the bottom middle there, she came to us as a relatively new Christian and has become a really key part of our church just in the last several months. Ashley on the bottom right, he seems to have been saved during COVID. Annette on the top right, it was her husband you saw his photo being baptized. She was saved just in the last year and is planning to be baptized in October. And all of these things just came about when we felt like our hands were tied. So we just praise the Lord for what He's doing, and we feel like we're on the cusp of a new chapter for the church that we're in. One thing that has been very encouraging for us is we started a toddler group just before lockdown. It had to be on pause for a while, and then we've resumed it. But it's for mothers in the village and their toddlers. And we open the church up on Tuesday mornings and get the toys out, and these women come. And they just socialize. We serve them as much tea and coffee and cookies and cakes as we can. Some of the older ladies in the church bake things for that. And even that kind of hospitality isn't something that would be as common in the UK. And so we welcome them. We want them to feel at home. And we teach them, or Marcia usually teaches, a Bible story. We gather them around for a snack and a Bible story. And of course, these are babies and toddlers. So the Bible story is really for the mothers. I don't know if they've picked up on that, but they're hearing about Jesus. They're hearing from God's Word on a weekly basis. And she teaches a Bible story, and then we sing songs. We start off with Jesus Loves Me and My God Is So Big, and then we move on to the Grand Old Duke of York and Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and you know, all the hits that the toddler group would be familiar with. And we just sing with them and just have a great time. And we've had a lot of growing relationships with some of these young mothers. Right in the front of their church, right where I'm sitting in that photo, is our baptismal pool under the floor. And that in itself has sparked conversations, because they're used to seeing a christening at an Anglican church, that people still do those. So when they hear baptism, that's what they think of. And we tell them, oh, no, we put people all the way under, even adults. And they're just, you know, amazed by that. And our two older girls were baptized recently, and we were telling them about that. And it was just a way of pointing to Christ and reminding them, you know, there are people in this country that believe in God and believe in Jesus and want to follow Him. And even that is just kind of unheard of for most people. So I want to just show you a couple of things here. We have a video from Sue. You'll hear her give her own testimony here.
It's quite a complex one for me, in that I'd always believed I was Christian since I'd been confirmed as a 13-year-old. But actually, I think I began to realise back in 2010 that I was paying lip service. It wasn't real for me. But because I struggled with some of the things like, why would Jesus die for me? I could understand Him dying for other people, but not for me. It would be in March 2015. And there's a reason for that. I'd fought against it, but I didn't want Pete to actually give up living, because he kept saying I was the hardest person he'd ever brought to the Lord, and I didn't want him to stop fighting for life. So, in hindsight, I know whatever I did would not have changed how when he died. So yeah. So since 2015, I used to work in this village. I drive past, and I don't know that I ever realised it was a church. But one of the posters outside, as I was walking, and saying that you do Bible-based teaching, and I went home and said to Peter about that, and he said, "Well, okay, let's go and try it." So we managed once. Sadly, he was unable to come again because he was too ill every time we got ready. So after he died, I decided I needed to go back to church. So fairly constant since then, I think. Mm-hmm. I believe very strongly that the only reason I'm still here is because the Lord was with me throughout my COVID experiences, particularly the initial one back in 2020. Because there are days when I could quite easily have decided that's enough, I've had enough now. But I think the Lord kept me going. And the more I think about it, the more I think, well, I guess there must be a purpose in my life somewhere. So I think the Lord has kept me going and given me the strength to keep fighting. Because it's been a hard two, three years now. And has helped me with my grief as well. I think my favourite one has to be Hebrews And probably because of what I've been through in the last few years, that promise that he will never leave me. And that is always at the side of me when I go to bed at night, and it lights up so I can see it. So if I wake up in the night and I'm feeling a bit low, there it is, promising he'd never leave me. Okay. I think one of the things for me, I'm quite honest, I find it hard to pray out loud. I always have done. I tend to go into my little closet and pray. But what I have found very helpful for me over the last few years is the thought that people are praying for me, and that I know that the church has done that. And for that, I think that has helped me to get through everything. And I think the fact that I now pray for other people, it's taught me that that's something that I can do positively. And if somebody tells me they're not feeling well, then I'll do that. I mean, sometimes even on a text message, because that's the only way I have to communicate with them. So I think prayer is important, and the fact that I now have a church family, which I never had before.
So that was Sue, and she's had a lot of health troubles, you could gather from that, but she is actually a very capable woman. She was a teaching nurse in the 90s, spent months in Russia on several different trips teaching nursing. She has a lot of administrative skill, and in our little church she's been a great help in a lot of different ways. So we're very encouraged that she joined us, and the Lord's used her in a lot of different ways to help in our church. As I mentioned, our two oldest girls were both baptized just in July. We were very thankful for that. That is Phil on the right-hand side there, the former pastor. He's still helping as an elder in our church. So Margaret and then Gwyneth were both baptized. And that really moved things along for some of these other folks in our church that we've been talking to for a while, saying, well, you know, I think you do need to be baptized. And none of them were quite ready, but then when Margaret and Gwyneth were baptized, they were just like, well, what are we waiting for? We want to be too. So we've tentatively set a date in October and are looking forward to that not long after we get back. As I mentioned earlier, we do try to partner with other believers in Wales. And in North Wales, there are a number of other gospel preaching churches. We tend to be pretty spread out, but we do connect in whatever ways that we can. One way is something Marcia's going to share in just a minute. This is a picture from April when there was a pastor's wives conference. It was a weekend conference, and she'll tell you more about that in a minute when she comes up. These are just a couple of friends of mine, Chris on the left. And the photo on the right is Jonathan, and these are just men who are pastors in North Wales. And one thing I've been involved with over the years is we have something called Ministers Fraternals. A fraternal is a gathering of ministers, and we gather usually the second Monday of most months, and someone will usually be prepared to speak. They'll be assigned a topic of some kind. We move between theological topics and practical topics that have to do with ministry. And currently I'm the chairman of my fraternal, so most months we'll have between a dozen or 20 men. And we gather for prayer. Someone shares something that they've prepared, sometimes we'll have a speaker come in from somewhere else. And, you know, most of these men are in small churches. They don't have assistant pastors or music pastors or youth pastors. Many of them are on their own. With maybe an elder or two in the church. But these kinds of relationships are vital, really just to support and encourage and pray for one another. So we've tried to be involved as we can with other churches, because we need their input. We've learned a lot. We have a number of trusted friends that even now, after 14 years, almost 14 years in Wales, there are things we still don't have a great handle on, just in the culture. And when we're together, or we'll phone someone up and say, you know, hey, this happened. Can you explain this to me? What am I missing here? And we're thankful that we have friends like that who can help us out, and we try to help them out as well. Our girls are involved in a youth group that is comprised of kids from at least four different churches. We host that youth group a few times a year. Here they are on a walk not far from our house last summer. And I think in January this picture was taken. They all came to our house, and we squeezed them in. And most of these kids are in the public schools. And as young Christians, it is a challenge. Many of them are the only Christians in their schools. And so this kind of fellowship they have on a Friday night is vital. And it's really been a golden time for some of our families the last few years as friendships have formed, relationships have developed, and they have their own way of encouraging and helping one another and just being friends to one another in a way that they don't feel like they have to be on their guard like they do at school. All right, so things that we ask people to pray for us. And you might have noticed we have a display table in the foyer. There's some prayer cards there. We do need prayer. It is God's work, and He answers prayer. So these are the things that we ask prayer for in general. Open doors for the gospel. And often, just open doors to say something that will point someone to Christ. You may not get the chance to say the whole gospel message, but to plant a seed. And so we pray for open doors for the gospel. And then growth in discipleship. We've seen some new believers coming into our church, and thankfully some of them have said they want to be baptized and join the church. We really see them as the future nucleus of the church, and the long-term goal here is to see this church really self-sustaining. That may be in partnership with other churches in the area, but we're not there simply to just kind of keep the doors open for a handful of people. We're there to make disciples, to train them, to get them involved in the work of the ministry. And so we pray for growth in discipleship, growth in gospel unity. I mentioned that culturally in Wales, people can sometimes be backward-looking, and that is often true in churches. And yet, we need to have a style of ministry, an approach to ministry that fits the secular world we live in Wales in 2022 and beyond. And that often involves just adapting things and focusing on what is most effective at making disciples. We, of course, have our main meeting on Sundays where there's the preaching of the Word, the reading of God's Word, the singing of worship to God and prayer. But all the things that revolve around that, those things can sometimes need to be adapted and changed. And so we need gospel-based unity, unity around the priority of gospel advance. And then wisdom to live for Christ in difficult times. I know that's true anywhere. It's true in Greenville. It's true in Wales. Things change, cultures change, and we need wisdom for that. All right, so the privilege of partnering with other believers for gospel advance is a great joy. The Apostle Paul spoke of that to the Philippians. I thank my God in every prayer of mine for you all for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. I see you have pictures of missionaries in the hallway back there. You're partnered with them for gospel advance, and no doubt they give thanks for you. And we're thankful for everyone we're able to be partnered with by God's grace for the cause of the gospel. So that's a picture of our prayer card. I invite you to take one with you and pray for us. You can have a hand in the work of the gospel in North Wales. All right, I'm going to invite my wife Marcia to come up, and she'll share a little bit more about the way a ministry the Lord has given her in Wales.
A few years ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago, a small group of pastors' wives, they met together to start a pastors' wives conference. And at some point, I began to be involved with that. And it's really grown, and it's been a real blessing. Many, like Steve said, many of the pastors are pastoring small churches. Their wives often are working outside the home because the churches aren't able to support them. Often there's not a staff in those churches, so the pastors often rely a lot on their wives, even in the ministry as well. in 2020, obviously our conference was canceled because of COVID, and we moved it onto Zoom, and then that began throughout the next 2 years. Then we were able to meet on Zoom, and it was about between 20 and 30 women. We would just have different pastors' wives give a short talk, and then we would break up in groups and pray together, which has been such a blessing just to have that encouragement of older women and younger women to be able to share and discuss and ask questions from more experienced people. We started a WhatsApp chat so that people can ask for prayer or share resources. And then this year we were able to be back in person, and we had 30 women there, you saw in the photo. And I usually host the conference, which is, it's been such a blessing to be able to do that. I think because I'm American, they let me get away with a lot. The majority of the women in Wales, they would not feel comfortable up in front of everyone. So it's just something that I can do. I don't think it's, I'm that great at it. It's just I'm willing to do it. So, but it's usually a Friday night and then on to a Saturday. And this year, because we had been meeting on Zoom, I feel like everyone was a lot closer when we got there on Friday night. People were just ready to fellowship and pray together. And just the Lord's really working in the churches. And we just feel like and think that as we can encourage the wives, then that is going to bless their husbands, the pastor, in their family, and that is just really reaches the churches as well, because the pastors need to have their, you know, take care of their families. So it's just been just one small thing that the Lord has done, and we've been very encouraged with it. And if you think of it, we'd appreciate your prayers for that. Thank you.
Well, if there are any questions, we'll take a couple of minutes for that. It won't hurt my feelings if there aren't any, but are there any questions about anything we've shared tonight, about life in the UK or ministry in the UK, anything like that? Yes. Yeah, well, I actually grew up in Seattle, and you know, it's known for its rainy climate, and the UK is a lot like that. A couple of weeks ago, you might have heard about the heat wave that was over there. In North Wales, it doesn't get as hot as London. And we had 2 days that were in the mid-90s. It's never been that hot before in the 14 years we've lived there. And most summers, we don't get more than maybe a day that reaches 80 degrees. Probably this week, it's warm there, and it's going to be in the low 70s. So, and dark and rainy is what the winter is like. So come visit us. Anything else? Yes. We have probably about 90% of the support that we would set our goal for. You know, we're able to live over there as we are, but long term, we're really in need of raising about roughly 10% more than what we currently receive. Yes, thank you.
We do have a mic available, so let me get that mic to you. Then everybody can hear your question, but go ahead. Does anybody else have any other questions?
Yes.
You spoke of the Welsh language, but the lady that gave her testimony spoke English. So what language do you minister in?
We minister in English.
Okay.
About 20% of the people in Wales actually speak Welsh. And so the road signs are in Welsh and English. There are Welsh language schools that children can attend if they want to, or if their parents want them to.
Do they teach it in the regular schools?
They do teach some in the regular schools. Our girls, they don't speak Welsh fluently or anything, but they're familiar with it. And where we live, we're about a half hour from the border with England, so there are a lot of people that have just moved over from England, and we don't hear Welsh in our village hardly at all, except for at the library or something like that. Yes, anything else? Okay, here.
Well, My husband was nervous. He thought it was him. I'm just curious, are there opportunities for vacation Bible school? Like, is the community open to that, or things for teens coming out of the church?
We have attempted things like that in the past. And, you know, I mean, where I grew up, even in the Northwest, and certainly in Greenville, you know, I was used to the concept of just, if you have a VBS, I mean, people will send their kids. And we've just not found that to be the case, that, you know, a church is a foreign entity to most people. So we have attempted, they'd be called holiday Bible clubs where we are, but, and some churches do have them. It tends to require more workers than we usually have available. So our ministry has been more on a personal basis. And when we have attempted like a VBS, we've just seen very little response to that. Yes, down here.
Yes, I was wondering about the economy of the country, what people do for a living there.
Well, in Wales, the main industries really are tourism and agriculture, and probably the biggest employer would be the government through the health system and schools and things like that. It's similar to here right now, where they're facing the possibility of a recession. The war in Ukraine has affected energy prices and other commodities. So it's similar to what we see in the news for the U.S. right now. The price of gas was already high compared to the U.S., but we're paying just recently the equivalent of about $9 a gallon for gas. So if you feel bad about $3.80 or whatever it is around here, just remember that other parts of the world are much worse. It's all relative, though, isn't it? So, in Wales, it used to be a lot of mining and industry like that, and most of that died away in the 80s, and some of that was due to Margaret Thatcher, if you remember Margaret Thatcher. So she's not a name that's revered in Wales at all, but so that's generally the general picture, anyway. Anything else? In the back over here? How am I accepted just walking around town?
Two other men. Are you a foreigner, or do they include you?
I think as a pastor and then as an American, I have a couple strikes against me perhaps, but we're welcomed in the village. We're at this point, we know a lot of people. They appreciate, I think, in a way, the contribution we make in the community. So we're on friendly terms. It's when you start wanting to talk about church and God and the gospel, that's when, things get awkward. And we really have found just it's working through relationships with people that we get anywhere with our witness. But there are many people now that, they accept us, I think, as much as they're ever going to, and we're thankful for that. Anything else? Yes, over here in the back.
So, I noticed a lot of your congregation is like older people. Is that like, I don't know how to explain it, like, is it like a lot of older people just finding that they're needing a need to fill their life with Christianity, and it's a lot easier to reach an older community than it is the younger community?
Well, I would say across a good bit of Wales anyway, churches are aging, and they have struggled to reach younger people. I think, there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, from the 50s onward, perhaps even earlier, you know, the culture has just done a sharp turn away from any sort of Christian background. Where we are, there are a lot of retired people as well, so that's a factor also. So churches are aging. The church we came to, they had six members that were all, you know, near over 65, so we started with quite an older group. That group, is most of them are still there, and then, yeah, in our community, it's a lot of older people too. So the average age of our church is trending downward, but yeah, it is a lot of older people. Yes, in the very back here.
Like, how close are you to the other churches? You say you meet with the other women and other pastors. What is your closest churches in your area that are Fundamental Baptist churches?
Well, I mean, our coworkers live about 6 miles away. Their churches, you know, are roughly 20, 25 people on a Sunday morning. We have another church that we partner with in various ways, about 20 minutes away, and they would have a congregation of about 30 to 35, perhaps. The church where the youth group is hosted that our girls are part of, that's about 30 minutes away. So that's kind of the, and there would be others further away than that. So, you know, we could probably, if we were to find like the dozen churches that were nearest to us, probably, yeah, the furthest would be well over an hour away. And, you know, there would be some, you know, the ones I mentioned were the closest.
Since you say they're unchurched, is there any other churches other besides, you know, like, you know, Baptist church? Is there any other, like, Catholics or Lutherans or Methodists,
yeah,
or whatever?
I mean, there's a Catholic church in our village. There's, I think, just a very small handful of people that would go there on a Sunday. There's an Anglican church, St. Mary's. It's the parish church, and the vicar there. She's a lady, and I don't know if she's actually a believer, but she is, at least she has a friendly view towards us. And I think there would be maybe, I'm not sure how many, maybe 20 people there on a Sunday morning. Our nearest neighbors are very involved there, and they don't know anything about the gospel, and they're very involved in the church. We had them in our house for dinner one time, and they didn't know anything about the Bible. I was just kind of assuming they would know something, and they would be familiar with some of the Ten Commandments probably, but very, you know, very nice people. But so that's just in our village. There's also a Welsh Presbyterian church, which is Welsh language, and the Presbyterian Church of Wales, which maybe some of you are familiar with the name Martin Lloyd Jones. Who was a preacher in London. He's from Wales. When he was coming up as a young pastor, there were possibly as many as 1,000 ministers in that denomination across Wales. But even then, they were departing from, you know, fundamental truths of the Bible. And the Presbyterian Church of Wales is just, it's just kind of slowly disappearing at this point. And but there's a Welsh Presbyterian church in our village. They would have maybe 10 people probably that go there in the morning. So there are, you know, and there are chapels everywhere. Some of them are turned into houses or places of business. You know, every village has a parish church of some kind, you know, that, so there are many different reminders of the history of Christianity in that country, but very few people that have any kind of knowledge of biblical Christianity.